Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. For our radio audience tuning in at WYAD 94.1 FM and WYADonline.com, we're glad that you all can be with us. Also, tuning in online worldwide via our podcast, we're glad you all could be with us as well. Well, I think all of us in life, if we're going to reflect back on where we are today and growing up, a lot of times we feel like we may have taken more risk when we were younger. We may have done things that were more out of the box that today may seem untraditional. Our next Discus has written a book to remind us not only about what we used to think was possible, but let us know what is possible for us when it comes to our lives today. We're excited to welcome author Hassan Morali to our broadcast today. He's the author of the new book, Sleep Well, Take Risks, Squish the Peas, Secrets from the Science of Toddlers for a Happier, More Successful Way of Life. What Dr. Morali has done in this book is so fascinating because it reminds us not only, of course, of how we used to think as young people, how young people do look at the world, but also how we can make changes today to make ourselves more productive and happier as well. If you guys are just now finding out about the book, we'll let you know how to get your own copy of it. Dr. Morali, thank you so much for the time today. Really appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
This is such an important conversation, Dr. Morali, and I think a lot of times when we have a book like yours that literally gets us to reflect back on how maybe we used to be or how we see, you know, children today, we think, wow, yeah, I used to be so much freer. You know, I used to think, you know, I could take risks. I could be Superman and a fireman and being able to have a family, you know. What has it been like for you to kind of have us reshape that conversation for ourselves as adults?
Yeah, it's so important that you mentioned that we used to be these people. And I'm lucky that I'm in pediatrics and I've been working with young children for 14 years now. And I've had these reminders of my own childhood as well, working with them. And it's been so fascinating to see how they do a lot of these things so well, like laughter, playing, taking risks, like you mentioned. And so I was just thinking to myself about how wonderful that time period was, both for myself and how they are now. And so I started digging into the literature about what if we adapted some of these things? What does it show? And I was pleasantly surprised that there's so much good data for adults who are able to adapt some of these things in their own lives.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of us, it really does go back to listening to ourselves. You talk about it in the book. I love that chapter about self-talk. And a lot of times as adults, you know, we allow other people to tell us what we cannot do. For children, that goes in one ear and out the other most of the time. You know, what was that like for you when it comes to that particular and powerful point about the importance of listening to ourselves and trusting that?
Yeah, it's amazing. I have a 3-year-old, and so when she gets out of bed in the morning, as soon as she spots herself in the mirror, she'll walk over and give herself a big high five, because
oh,
she
wow.
just has that confidence every day of that it's going to be a great day, and I'm awesome, and my friends are awesome, and that's how we're going to go through the day. And if you spend a little bit of time with them, even if you're just around them, when I go to a preschool and pick her up, I hear these kids in the hallway encouraging themselves. There's a little girl named Julie, and she was putting on her mitts the other day, and she's saying, Julie can do it. And this type of self-talk that's very positive and very encouraging has a lot of good data behind it in adults. And so there's a great researcher at the University of Michigan. His name's Ethan Cross, and he's written a great book called Chatter. Your listeners might want to check out. And it talks about how if we just reframe the conversation with ourselves from using I to second or third person, that we can actually make ourselves less anxious, make ourselves better at certain sports, and really get out of those high anxiety provoking situations a lot better.
Another thing I thought was interesting, and this was for myself, you know, I'm a self-professed nerd, Dr. Morali, and so reading has always been a part of my life, and now, of course, it's part of what I'm able to do for a living, which I'm very appreciative of. But you did show something very interesting. I think our audience, and if they're honest with themselves, again, they will see the correlation, and that is even the idea of imagination, of learning, it drops off as you get older. You talk about that in the book about reading. Was that surprising for you to think about how more we try to take in words and stories when we're younger and how that does drop off because of life happening to us as we get older.
Yeah, I was most surprised by how much it does drop off when we exit childhood and get into adulthood, and it only really comes back when people enter retirement in their 60s. And reading is something that is so powerful for so many reasons. And
yeah,
when you're around toddlers, they just, you know, are asking for stories all of the time. And that's how they want to end their night. That's what they want to be doing with adults around them. And I think there's a really important lesson there, because if adults were to read more, there's really good data now that this is a type of brain exercise for us. So good for you for doing that. And if we're exercising our brain, that actually prevents against mild cognitive impairment, or MCI, which can further lead to dementia. And so there's a lot of powerful data around reading regularly, and including deep reading without our phones or any distraction.
Yeah, I love that. So I didn't ask you this question, and for our audience to know, and again, we're going to let them know to get their own copy of the book. Dr. Morelli, what was the idea? You mentioned, of course, the work that you're able to do, you know, with toddlers, you know, with children. What was it that made you say, I need to share what I'm seeing and learning here in a book?
So I've had these thoughts, like, all along over those last decade and a half, when I would have all these wonderful experiences in the ER working with kids. And, you know, I'll just share maybe one story.
Sure.
This just happens so often to me that I was just amazed by it. So a lot of times little kids and older kids will come in with belly pain. And so during that time, they're not allowed to eat. And so we restrict them from eating. We're getting blood work. We're getting ultrasound. You know, they're super hungry. It's been 6-7 hours. They haven't eaten. And so most of the time I'm lucky. I get to go back in the room, tell them that everything's okay. Their child can eat again. You know, parents are waiting at the edge of their seats, waiting with their kid's favorite snack, which is almost always crackers. And these little people grab the crackers. They look at me. Somehow they're able to see that I haven't eaten also for 6-7 hours. And at least the third cracker is offered to me out of that packet. And they're just so sweet and so gentle and prioritize relationships and kindness so much. And so many of these things have happened to me over the years. I just thought, I have to get this out. These people need a voice. They are the best people.
Yeah, such a great thing. And I think for so many, you know, and it's interesting that we're having this conversation, Dr. Morelli, I don't have any children of my own, but I was fortunate enough, my mom had owned a daycare when I was younger. So I remember being around all of these children and changing diapers and feeding them and playing with them and doing exercises with them, right? And then during the summer, I would, you know, be a part of the after school, you know, the summer programs with them. And so it is really amazing to me, not only, of course, the excitement they have about life, but also the idea of even though they want their own thing, being able to work together and how excited they are for others. And we do lose that, right? We do lose that so much. I want to talk about that aspect, about one of the things you talk about in the book that I made a note of is about what it means to not just be a team player or team member, but an ultimate team member. Talk to us about that and what that's been like for you to show, not only, of course, in looking at toddlers, but also the benefits for us in working together to achieve great things.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, and you're lucky you got to spend so much time with little people.
Yeah.
So as I was going through thinking about them and taking lessons from them, I realized that a lot of these activities and behaviors that toddlers have are really applicable to our work life. And so I split the book up into two parts. The first part is really about lessons we can learn that will help us in life overall. And the second part really focuses on workplace lessons. And I think one of the best ways that toddlers shine, if we could adapt some of their behaviors, is with teamwork, as you mentioned. So there's a lot of great data around what happens when toddlers are working in a team. And this happens when toddlers are paired with an adult. They start working on a joint task, and the adult just suddenly stops working. And so the researchers are testing, what does the toddler do? And it's actually quite amazing, because we've all been in situations where we're working with someone, we all have to work in teams, someone's not performing or doing what we thought they would do, and how do we react to that? So here's what toddlers do. First, they prioritize clear communication. They directly address that person politely and use words, you know, in their own language about what needs to be done. And I see the parallel with this in our own workplaces, where sometimes there's just a miscommunication. If we were just respectful, polite, and had clear communication, we might be able to get that person back on track. If that doesn't work, they'll actually physically go over to that person and demonstrate what needs to be done. You know, they're thinking, oh, maybe this person didn't understand how this task is supposed to work, so I'm going to show them. They are very respectful. They don't blame other people. Their goal is just to work together. And the other thing that they're really good at is that if the equipment breaks down, like, you know, we have computer failures in our own work, they actually don't get too angry. They just work to figure out how to get the thing done. And they don't have a tantrum, which they, you know, get a bad reputation for. They're really focused on what is the best way that I can work with this person. And it's special and something we can learn a lot from.
Yeah. In all that you've been able to do, I thought about this, Dr. Morelli, when I was preparing for the segment, you've been able to find what we look at as success for yourself and work that you genuinely love. It's hard to read this book and not see the passion that you have, the curiosity. What do you think has helped you to keep that? Because I think for a lot of people, we don't go through life expecting to lose it. You know, I've been very fortunate in my profession to be able to keep that joy and curiosity about life and having conversations like this and being able to switch it up. And it's so ironic when I was reading your book, I thought about, I use the analogy a lot because I do 25 shows here a week for the radio side of our broadcast. And I think it's like going from one PlayStation to the next, right? Like, you know, I played with this. Now I get to go over and play with that. So that's the analogy that I have used in my work. What has helped you to keep that passion and joy that you have?
You know, I reflected on this a while ago. I'm glad you asked that. No one's ever asked me that before. And I didn't realize this till later, until I actually wrote this book, is that the kids I've surrounded myself with have really kept that going for me because they're just curious people. And one of the things, I have a whole chapter on this, is their ability to ask questions. Like, there is nobody that can ask more questions per hour than a toddler. And that curiosity is just part of who they are. And I think if you're around them, it just rubs off on you. And I find myself asking a lot of questions too, because I'm asked a lot of questions by them. And now I'm lucky that I have a little one myself. She's 3. And so I am bombarded with questions in a very fun way. And it makes me think a lot too, and keeps my curiosity alive.
You talk about another thing that was interesting to me in the chapter, asking questions and saying no. You talk about what separates toddlers and why they don't, you know, we may make fun of these videos and things we see about them saying no, but also for ourselves, the conundrum we find ourselves in. You write this in a book. I want to read a bit of this, Dr. Morelli. It's in the subheading, Being an Adult Puts You in a Pickle. You write, unfortunately for adults, saying no does not come as easily for two reasons. First, like toddlers, we also have a yes bias, but instead of saying yes to questions about unfamiliar objects, we tend to say yes to tasks others ask us to do. And secondly, we are notoriously inaccurate in estimating how much time a given task will take. I think many people can relate to that. These two things together work against us. We want to say no, but understanding them and the reasons why we say yes may help in being able to say no more often. I love this, and I thought about too, and I'm in a unique position, Dr. Morelli, in that I'm a single guy, so I don't feel the pressures, except when it comes to my parents, of saying yes to them for things I don't even want to do, you know, just because I feel, you know, obligated. But I think when I was reading this chapter, I thought, you know what, there's some people that are for one thing, they don't want people to be upset with them. So they say yes to things they don't really want to do. But also there's almost an obligation, like we've been guilted into thinking, I'm supposed to do this. What was that like for you to evaluate for yourself in the sharing a book like this?
Yeah, no, it's so true, and I think this will ring true for everybody because I find myself in this position a lot. Like later I say, why did I say yes to this? And everybody gets there, and we get there very often, and we keep doing it. And so what is going on really when we're doing this? And I think it's exactly what you said. There's a social pressure, and our default is yes, where toddlers are able to look at a person in authority right in the eye and say the most powerful no. And I don't think we need to be that extreme about it. We can be a lot more polite about it, but I think there's an important lesson there. And so the subheading you talked about being in a pickle, it comes from a study from the University of Waterloo where these students went around asking people to vandalize a library book. They said, I have this library book. I'm trying to play a prank. Can you write the word pickle in this book? And, you know, they didn't think very many people would do it. They thought they would have to ask 10 or 11 people before doing it. But it was actually less than half of that because people want to please others. And these were strangers. And they want to be able to say yes. So even silly things that have consequences, they'll say yes to. And so that's, I think, the first point. We do have this yes bias. We do want to please others. But that, on the flip side, can lead to an overwhelming calendar and a lot of stress. And so a couple of strategies, I think, that are really important to be able to say no. The first one, I think, is task segmentation. So a lot of tasks come to us which are quite complex. And I think breaking them down into smaller parts and estimating the time of the smaller parts can get us to a more accurate measure. And there's a lot of good data around that. The second thing is really, before you say yes, having what's called an implementation intention. So you're setting time in your calendar when you're going to do this. And it actually forces you to look at your calendar and put in time when you're going to be able to work on this. And that can kind of maybe show you, maybe I don't have the time for this. And then finally, the most powerful one, it's actually fascinating, is getting yourself to the point where you can say, I don't. So for example, for me, I have a problem with eating late at night, or at least I did for a while. And I've trained myself to say, you know, I'm not the type of person to eat after 9 p.m. So I don't eat after 9 p.m. instead of I can't. And that simple strategy has really shown in the research, especially around eating and a few other things, that can be really helpful in getting us to know and actually making the other person understand that that's who you are.
Yeah, such a great point. You referenced something earlier, and I thought about it when you were talking about it, about your own experience with your own child, and you know that the self high five. You talk about that in the chapter Risk Taking and Confidence, and you tie it into, for us as adults, you know, ways that we can be able to do that. And a lot of times, especially for us guys, I thought about, and again, I'm a single guy, but I think about my friends that are married, Dr. Morelli, and a lot of times we don't give ourselves credit for the things that we do, like being able to help out our children, you know, when they may need a ride somewhere, or something that we can do to save the day for our, you know, for our wife, you know, maybe to be able to make things a little easier for them, you know, taking that initiative. But you talk about in the chapter something I could relate to, and that is in the workplace, giving ourselves credit for that. What do you want our audience to know about that? Because a lot of times there is so much focus on what we don't do, what we didn't do. Why is it important for us to give ourselves that self, you know, high five for the things that we do get accomplished?
Yeah, there's so much of that. And you know, it comes back a little bit to the self-talk issue too. We're a little bit hard on ourselves and we don't need to be. And, you know, that's not the toddler way. The toddler way is exactly what you said, is self high five, realizing that you are a great person, talking to yourself that way, and really being proud of accomplishments. And, you know, the parts of my book are titled a gold star because that's what they're really focused on and what they give themselves during the day and they're happy about. And so, you know, I think one of the ways that I really like, a couple of things we can do to do that is I do this myself. I go back in my calendar 1 year or 2 years from the date that I'm on every once in a while, and I'll just look at what my life was like then and what was I doing then. And I'll just, you know, reflect on that year and what I've accomplished. And I that makes me quite happy. And, you know, as an academic, I actually have to go through in detail my CV every year to submit it to the university. And I think that's helpful too. And it doesn't necessarily have to be things on CVs, but it can be anything. But this just process of reflection of how far you've come, and you can even go a little further back than a year if you want to, I think it's very helpful to really show yourself how much you've done, and hopefully that'll give you a little bit more confidence to do even more.
Love that. Such a great conversation with you, Dr. Morelli, and such a great book. It's something our audience should pick up, be able to reflect on, and share with their friends. Again, everyone, Dr. Hassan Morelli has been our guest. The book is Sleep Well, Take Risks, Squish the Peas, Secrets from the Science of Toddlers for a Happier, More Successful Way of Life. You can get it through our friends at Amazon.com or through, of course, your favorite local bookstore if they don't have it. I know they'd be more than happy to order it for you. Dr. Morelli, what about for yourself? How can our audience stay connected with you?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So I do have a website. It's just my name, Hassanmerali.com. I'm active on X LinkedIn and Facebook. If anybody wants to connect there, I post regularly about toddler lessons that I continue to learn, and try to connect that to the adult research. And yeah, I hope to hear more from listeners too, whether you have children or not. I think it's helpful for me to get some of the feedback and lessons that you might be learning in your own life, and it helps inspire me to write more.
Love that. Well, I'm so glad you wrote this book. There's so many great things. I'll make sure that I write my review for you on Amazon, Dr. Morelli, and share my thoughts, and definitely encourage anyone else as you have finished the book to be able to make sure you're doing the same thing. And Dr. Morelli, looking forward to our next chat together. Really appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you so much. That was fun.
And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live, and let's go make today amazing. Take care.